You're listening to WNTN 1550 AM and WNTN.com. Boston's hub for international radio and specialty programs.
This week's market update, Wall Street this week with Manny Frangidakis and Stamati Sasta on the phone. Good morning, gentlemen. I'm here with Petra and Costa this morning. How you guys doing? Hola, kala.
Kalimera.
Kalimera, Manoli.
Yeah. No, I just introed it. We were listening to a song, a heavy Zebekiko, and it's in a Misa Faneta Mavra Psaria, and the bank's been doing some.
Δεν μου λες, Μανώλη, θα μας φάνε τα μαύρα ψάρια εάν δεν μπορούμε να δανειστούμε λεφτά από την τράπεζα.
I mean, that is a, you know, a scary situation. I need τράπεζες in a μαύρα ψάρια. I mean, you know, there is a concern there.
We were talking about earlier. I asked the professor to explain to us, you know, what he foresees, you know, with the banking system. And then I stopped them. I says, Manny's going
to
be on 11 o'clock, so he'll be able to explain to us in details what we have to do in order to avoid any problems. So the floor is yours.
Right. Yeah, no, so from a banking situation right now, I mean, we've pretty much plugged the ship. Mm-hmm. The question is, and the concern going into yesterday morning was what would take place over the weekend, and potentially do you see other smaller mid-market banks close up similar to a Silicon Valley or a Signature. You know, Silicon Valley at the time was the 16th largest bank based off deposits in the United States. It wasn't one of the large ones, which meant that they didn't have to go through strict, rigorous regulation as, you know, JP Morgan and B of A and Citi. But, you know, being the 16th largest, you know, there is fear of contagion risk there. But at the moment, it looks like we've plugged ship. You know, just given what we've done with the overnight window. In fact, actually, Goldman Sachs just came out and said what the Federal Reserve and Treasury did with the overnight window has reversed course a significant amount of tightening that we put forward this year, as now liquidity is seeping back into the market to make deposits whole. So I don't see another run on the banks. I think we plugged that ship. But, you know, from here, it's a matter of where do we go in terms of the economy. The number one concern is, you know, as we are going through a slowdown process, if we do see C&I loan growth completely dissipate and evaporate, what does that do to, you know, general economic growth as we move forward in the years to come?
Yeah. No, I was saying earlier, you know, it's an issue of just you can't really predict it because it's an issue of confidence. Our whole economic system is certainly based on confidence, and you could just go on the rumors, you know, just even like with Credit Suisse and UBS last week, you know, how the whole thing just evolved. So I think everybody's sort of like, you know, holding pattern and waiting to see, you know, because we also have a paradox, right? In one sense, you have like this issue of like debt and liquidity, and then you also have a liquidity crisis at the same time. It's sort of like, you know, this paradox that we're seeing out there.
100% agree. It's 100% a confidence issue. This is completely different than 2008, where you had a credit issue.
Yeah.
So it'll be, you know, and as it relates to, you know, Credit Suisse and UBS is, you know, what the domino effect that happened here caused that outcome to occur over that last weekend. Because, in fact, Credit Suisse looked like they were actually getting better compared to where they were the last two decades. They've obviously gone through massive amounts of turmoil, whether it was, you know, CEO-driven or investor-driven or hedge fund-driven when they got caught up in that Archegos hedge fund a few years ago. But Credit Suisse was actually deleveraging. Credit Suisse was getting ready to sell off their investment banking division and look solely on wealth management and building that outfit out, which a lot of people were excited about. They thought that they were going to make a similar recovery to how Deutsche Bank recovered post 08. But with a confidence issue arising in the U.S. banking system, that spilled over to Europe, and that had significant effects. But the other big thing is that all this stuff is connected. One of the largest holders of U.S. technology companies was the Swiss government.
Yeah.
They lost billions during, you know, from 2021 through 2022. You know, just this morning there was a report that Denmark, Swiss, you know, central bank had exposure of $780 million of losses just in First Republic stock.
Yeah.
So this has had a, you know, a domino effect, not just here, but across the world.
No, you're trying to stop another type of a pandemic, right? This is an economic. Mm-hmm. You're trying to stop the possibility of an economic pandemic. I mean, my question to you is, like, you know, how much do you think it's, like, you know, the increase in interest rates over the last year by the U.S. Federal Reserve caused the issues with Silicon Valley Bank? I mean, is it like are those two?
It's 1,000%.
Yeah.
This is 100% driven by that. So what people don't, what the biggest message here with Silicon Valley Bank was, it was piss poor risk management. Yeah. What they did in 2018 and in 2019 is essentially put a significant amount of dollars into U.S. Treasuries, thinking that interest rates would never rise. So when you're buying U.S. Treasuries and interest rates are at 0 to 2%, you are buying that bond price at an all-time high. Yeah. When they sold assets prior to the bank failure last week of $1.8 billion in losses, those were all treasury bonds that they had to get out of at the worst possible time due to the fact that they needed to make deposits whole and they had fallen below their cash reserve requirements. So when you're looking at a bank, they can loan up to – they have to keep 20%. So if I deposit a dollar, they can loan out five. So they had very poor – deposit growth over the last few years as well, which stemmed the problem. So they're the biggest lender to tech and startups. So these companies were actually burning cash versus depositing cash as retail banking customers, which only, you know,
made things worse.
You know, exacerbated the problem, especially when you line it up with poor risk management. You know, they never had interest rate swaps on their books, which is something that they should have looked at, given the fact that they were investing in treasury bonds at the lowest generational interest rate and highest price point that they'd ever been at.
Manny, on the subject of interest rates, I was listening the other day. Are they dropping a little bit for the homeowner? Did I hear something that they are dropping a little bit?
Well, I mean, you've seen a massive drop in yields over the last week. So
yeah.
You went from a 10-year note that was close to 4%, which we always talked about having, you know, some friction with the equity markets, to now you're at 3.5%. So you've had a significant drop in yield across the board. Now, whether banks are giving that out to customers, I don't know.
Okay.
I still think that homeowners and purchasers are facing higher mortgage rates. And here's the problem with what we're seeing in potential C&I and loan growth. If this dissipates, it just means that banks are going to be more reluctant to lend out capital, and they'll probably attach a higher interest rate to it, just due to the standpoint that they need to now become, you know, more profitable. Because, you know, even with the $30 billion that was deposited towards First Republic to keep it whole for the moment, you know, that is money that these banks are going to have to make up in, you know, excess fees, et cetera. Because, you know, as much as they say that the taxpayer won't bear this, they absolutely will. And whether it's in the form of higher taxation or higher banking fees, it will definitely dwindle down to them.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing to me, like, you know, just to follow up, I mean, just to briefly, it's just the level of coordination. So, like, you know, you're going from deregulation and, like, you know, the role of the Federal Reserve to now, like, you know, five Federal Reserve banks across the globe are sort of like coordinating on a daily basis. So we're sort of like, are on the other end of the spectrum here, how big this and how interconnected our global financial system is and how it's just like unpredictable it is, because, you know, you just try to fix one thing and it breaks down somewhere else that you don't even see it. And then you have the human factor in there as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about two bank failures and two banking crises in 14 years. That's unheard of. So obviously there's something seriously wrong with monetary policy and the way that we're making economic decisions.
Yeah.
The other biggest difference is that, you know, 2008, post-Dodd-Frank, what came out in terms of banking regulations, which pretty much created the problem that we're talking about with SVB, is banks were then, at the post-2008, were only allowed to invest in two things, treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. Both of those are fixed rate. They removed their ability to invest in corporate bonds, which are floating rate. If that rule probably never took place, we probably have a much better banking system right now, as if they were invested in corporate bonds, those would have been floating rate with the interest rate hike and would have been just fine. They wouldn't have sold off the way that the treasury market did.
well, what are the prospects of something like that, though, Manny? I mean, like, you know, I was just really surprised. Like, you know, we just sort of like brought back Elizabeth Warren. Like, you know, it's almost like, you know, we're going back to the, like, nothing has happened. And, you know, we have the same kind of a conversation. So, like, from the inside, I mean, what do you think the prospects are of, like, finally learning and sort of, like, you know, how complex our financial system is and doing something about it?
That's the problem right now, is that we don't, there's no clear messaging. For example, tomorrow is probably the most difficult Federal Reserve meeting that I could ever remember. You know, I hope they hike 25 basis points because they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. But my guess is they hike tomorrow and then they go on pause and wait for 6 weeks until the next meeting and give themselves some flexibility to say, how is the economy handling this? But I do think even at this point, when you look at the CPI that's coming out, you know, yes, year over year number is dropping. But if you look at the core, it's either staying the same or increasing on a month over basis. And that's just massively problematic for the Fed. That's exactly what they don't want to see happening. So now you have this banking crisis that is a confidence crisis that is due to the massive, you know, rise in interest rates after keeping them way too low for way too long. And now you're also dealing with inflation that is continuing to be persistent and probably doesn't get stamped out. And that's the biggest concern, is that we can't take the actions necessary right now to stamp out inflation for the next 1 to 2 years and take our medicine and move forward with potentially another leg of a bull market. Now we're going to look like we're going to be creating liquidity again, trying to piece together the economy and let inflation continue to run rampant, which brings you to a stagflationary period where essentially no one wins.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, in a time when, like, you know, most people having a really difficult time with everyday economic decisions.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just like it's one of those, like, you know, really like a conundrum moving forward. And I think we would certainly have social and political implications as we're seeing bubbling up everywhere.
Oh, it most certainly will.
Yeah.
It most certainly will. And I think we'll learn more tomorrow. Hopefully we get some information from Powell in his 2:30 press conference. But frankly, the direction that we're heading in right now is, I think, is the most, you know, confused, uncertain environment that anyone can ever remember.
Yeah. Do you see that with your clientele? You know,
I mean, we've fielded a ton of phone calls over the last, call it, 10 days, essentially answering questions and trying to calm nerves. Thankfully, we don't have any exposure to this. Thankfully, we're happy with how we're positioned. We didn't have exposure to those bonds in the last few years, and in fact went into bonds, you know, this past year with, you know, a 5% interest rate on a 6-month treasury note. So feeling confident with where we are and how we're handling clients, but the question is where does the overall economy go from here?
Very interesting. Gentlemen, I know that Costa and Petro have to go. They're going off to Rhode Island. There is a Greek Independence Day celebration right in downtown.
Manny, you are invited, and of course, Stamati is invited as well.
Yeah. But
thank you,
gentlemen.
So it's been a pleasure talking to you guys. You know, like, thank you for the information, Manoli.
No problem, Gus. I know I just made your day. So
I think it's important.
Manny,
I mean,
we bring a good. You know, you break it down for us in layman's terms, basically.
Look, I mean, we started out today, but I just want to interject here. We started out today, you know, and one of the questions was like, you know, what's going on with, like, you know, Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels? And I think it's sort of like, you know, this is the stuff that we should be focusing on, like what Manny just, you know,
exactly,
described, rather than just like the gossipy stuff that was sort of like, you know, mesmerized by.
You know, you got to learn what's, you know.
It's everyday stuff. It's, you know, it's a far more important what's going to go on
You know, when it affects our daily. Listen, Manny, before I let you go, Manny, quick question. Who's going to win the NCAA basketball tournament?
I don't know, guys. UConn. I mean, UConn is very powerful.
Listen, you never
I
know.
I hope not, because I dislike the coach.
I'm going Princeton all the way.
Oh, come on.
Not that my bracket has been that great this year, but I do have UConn winning things since inception. So
wow.
I think that
I hope not, because I dislike the coach. He used to coach for URI and he left.
It's New England, I'll take it.
Yeah.
But what about Cooley? You see the coach of Providence College? He's moving for $3 million to Georgetown. This is the first time in 43 years that a coach will leave to go from one school to the same the same league. It's like a big controversy. Everybody's upset. I'm sorry?
Is it official?
Official, yeah. He announced yesterday, yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
he even put his home for sale, you know.
Puglietti.
Yeah.
Put it on classified. I know. Stay tuned, yeah. 10 minutes. We got the classified.
All right.
Manny Stamati, thank you very much, gentlemen. And we will regroup one of our most important segments weekly, 12 Points Wealth Management with Manny Frangidakis. Thank you, Stamati. Gentlemen, thank you. I know you got to go. Yeah. We'll be right back.